Welcome to Nevada Newsmakers. On the broadcast today, Holly Wellborn joins us. She's the policy director for the ACLU of Nevada for the whole show on an all-new Nevada Newsmakers.
The 6th annual Nevada Newsmakers Goes to Washington is brought to you by Pro Group Management, workers' comp that works for you, the Nevada Trucking Association. Motion and purpose are a truck's greatest virtue. And Par Tolls Development Company, breathing life into Northern Nevada's future.
Here's award-winning Nevada consumer advocate John Sasser.
Question 3's electricity deregulation scheme would be very costly for Nevada consumers. Consumer groups have studied what happened in states that tried electricity deregulation. It led to higher electric rates and deceptive sales practices. It would cost Nevadans an estimated $4 billion and increase a typical family's electric bill by hundreds of dollars per year. Please join our coalition and vote no on 3. Thank you.
Pro Group Management offers workers' comp services to a growing number of industries. As businesses grow and change with the times, the need for a solid workers' comp program must be flexible and up to date. The evolving nature of regulations can make staying ahead of complex tasks challenging. But Pro Group Management simplifies the work so your industry can move forward and succeed. Pro Group Management. Workers' comp that works for you.
Truck drivers are some of the hardest working people you'll meet, delivering over 70% of America's freight and 92% of Nevada's. When there's a natural disaster, they're delivering critical supplies to help those communities recover and rebuild. Every sector of the economy and our nation's military rely on truck drivers. So let's take a moment to say thank you. On the open road or city streets, our truck drivers are rolling to make our economy and our nation stronger. Trucking moves America forward.
This is Nevada Newsmakers with host Sam Shan on No Holds Barred Political Forum. Now, from the Nevada Newsmakers broadcast headquarters, here is Sam Shan.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we're pleased to welcome to the program for the first time Holly Wellborn. She's policy director for the ACLU of Nevada. Pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So one of the issues that's coming up, one of the questions on the ballot, will be about Marcy's Law. There's been a lot of money invested in promoting this. And it was almost by happenstance that we were in conversation with the ACLU, and they said, well, we're not in favor of it, but this, you know, we don't have the resources financially to be able to fight it, and they do on the other side. So we had a representative from Marcy's Law on the program, a state director, and basically this deals with victims' rights. Mm-hmm. And in their opinion, ensuring that victims' rights are taken care of as well as the defendants' rights. And, you know, this is really the first opposition of any organization that I've heard to this. So explain to us what your thought is, A, on Marcy's Law and what it means and why the ACLU is against it.
Great. So the way that we see it, Marcy's Law is an experimental unfunded mandate that will undo the criminal justice system and change the criminal justice system as we know it.
But apart from that, mm-hmm. No, I'm kidding. I'm sorry. But I mean, that's a pretty huge statement.
It is. It is. Because if we're looking at the underlying premise of the criminal justice system, when we're talking about criminal defendants, we're talking about their rights against the government. When we're talking about the rights of victims, we're talking about their rights when another person invades their daily living, their ability to, you know, work and function and rehabilitate after they've been victimized. This is about government accountability and what is provided for in the United States Constitution. Those rights are paramount. When we're talking about victims' rights, there's other mechanisms for protecting victims' rights. Victims need housing services, transportation services, assistance through getting temporary protection orders, different types of legal services, not this ability to sue the government. Very few victims will actually be able to participate in that. You have to hire an attorney to assert your rights under question one. So from our perspective, it does little to really help victims, will cost a lot of money for states. We're looking at states like South Dakota, where they had $500,000 within a few months with implementation costs. That money could really be utilized elsewhere and more effectively while also protecting the paramount constitutional rights of criminal defendants.
All right, so why do you think that on the one hand, and understandably, Marcy's Law is funded by one person, and they're a billionaire, and so they have the ability to both get this on the ballot and fund the campaign. But why do you think nobody else? In fact, I didn't even know the ACLU was against it until we were in a conversation about something completely different.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. We were very ardently opposed and very vocally opposed in the 2017 legislative session and the 2015 legislative session. We put out a lot of, press and op-eds and testified against the legislation along with the Clark and Washoe County Public Defender's offices. But I think where it's at is there's just so much more support behind it. And really, when we're looking at victims' rights, we all want to protect victims' rights. Victims' rights are of utmost importance. For example, we testified in favor of a bill that would expand the Victims' Crime Compensation Fund to undocumented individuals who have high rates of victimization in our communities. They weren't able to access those funds. So that's what we think we should be focusing on, rather than taking rights that already exist in statute and making them constitutional when so many of the issues that affect victims are very fluid and need reform.
All right. But it's gone through two sessions of a legislature. It is now going to the vote of the public. And at this point in time, it seems to me that, it's a little too late.
We have to be out there talking about it. But really, I think because of the complexity of it, when we're talking about the rights that are actually violated, for example, we think the worst problem with question one is that it undermines the most sacred constitutional premise, which is the presumption of innocence. By allowing a victim to come into the procedural aspects with notification even before a person has charges pressed against them, even before they're convicted, we're essentially saying that that person is, by default, guilty. And that is against everything that our system stands for. Now, when it comes down to it, it's really more the legal strategies in different states that have worked. Marcy's Law has been defeated or changed in a variety of states. It was shot down in Montana. South Dakota actually amended theirs, and it was prompted by district attorneys because of the issues that they were having with enforcement, so they made it an opt-in. This is, once it goes into effect, people really see the mistakes that are apparent with question one. And we're going to be there to fight that legally if we have to once those rights start conflicting.
Why do you think so many in law enforcement have been in favor of this? They've come out publicly in favor of it.
I think that it's very difficult to come out against something that's entitled the Victims' Crime Bill of Rights. And what's interesting about it is actually during legislative sessions, the legislative sessions, law enforcement did have some issues with it.
For example,
you have to read a person their rights. You have to notify them of their rights at the forefront. We deal with
This is the victim.
Mm-hmm. You have to, once this passes, you have to notify them of their rights and read their rights.
So kind of like a Miranda rights, but for victims.
Precisely, exactly like that. And they had a lot of issues with that because sometimes it's difficult for officers to remember to read those rights when they're dealing with criminal defendants.
But the same could be, say, of Miranda, certainly in the initial days of Miranda.
Right, exactly. And I think that's our point, that it's when they're in the heat of, dealing with a criminal offender, it's difficult for them to get through that process. But it's not only that. They're very worried about jail overcrowding with the notification requirements, that it will cost a lot of money to keep people in jail because you have to wait to notify them before you can send someone to a bail hearing.
The one thing that you haven't mentioned, which kind of surprises me, is the fact that this would be enshrined in the Nevada State Constitution. And, there's been a lot of discussion, for example, about question three, that it's going to be in the state constitution, and there are some that are against question three who are saying, it will take such a long time to be able to change that. And yet you didn't raise that issue, which
right,
kind of that, surprises me.
That's really what's so critical here, and I appreciate you for bringing that up. We have to think about that, and I think it's even more important when we're talking about victims' rights because this will be enshrined in the Constitution. And if there need to be any changes for such a nuanced issue, a nuanced, population who have, a lot of other needs rather than a constitutional right to enforce the provisions of question one, we need to be able to change that, and we won't be able to for a very long time.
So it would be literally 6 years from the time somebody
yes.
started a petition. Have you put together any cost for the state of Nevada at this point in time? You mentioned for another state, but any idea of what the financial cost would be to the state of Nevada?
We don't have any solid numbers on that, but that was a request that we made. That, you know, it's very surprising that there wasn't a fiscal note put on this initiative when it was going through the legislature, and we argued for that. We wanted to know, you know, what those implementation costs would be, especially because prosecutors will no longer be able to prioritize what cases they proceed with. So a petty theft will have, you know, as much consideration as, you know, a victim of a very violent crime, which will cost a lot of resources. How many, I don't know.
Are there instances in other states that you can mention, say maybe the top one or two, of where you feel that this was an egregious use of this law?
California, for example, we had the governor, Jerry Brown, he pardoned an individual, and he was sued under question one for not notifying the victim of that process, which can be really problematic when we're looking at the rights of criminal defendants, especially when we're looking at the right of innocence. That's very problematic. There's also been issues in California with the parole board process that it was essentially violating due process because it was allowing the victims always have a voice in those processes, but it was almost like operating like a victim's veto, therefore violating their rights when those proceedings are really based on their time in prison and their risk in the community.
So you feel that Marcy's law would inhibit somebody's chance of getting a fair shot at parole?
Yes, and that's the way that it looked like it was operating in
California. Do you think you're swimming uphill on this one? Because just overall, it sounds like a good idea. I mean, who is not in favor of victims' rights? And especially with the current climate in the United States and the United States Senate at this point in time with the confirmation hearing for Judge Kavanaugh, mm-hmm. That, you know, you're really swimming upstream to fight this.
But it is. It's a tough fight, and we recognize that. That's why, you know, when we're talking to media, people aren't really hearing what the other side is. We've struggled with that during the legislative session. Lawmakers really seemed to understand where we were coming from, but thought it was best to just proceed, even though these rights already exist in law.
You know, you bring up an interesting point, and before we go to break, I just want to ask you this. You know, for a long time, we dealt with tough on crime. Even people like Richard Bryan, when he was Attorney General, were running on, you know, do a crime, go to jail, and slamming the prison door. We were very tough on crime. Then it seems as though we were reforming the system, and people were becoming aware that this was just a very expensive process, three strikes and you're out, all these kind of things, and that they were not beneficial mm-hmm. to society. Do you think that is now turning with things like Marcy's Law, where we're turning back to a more tougher on crime attitude, that people have just had enough?
Absolutely, and I think we've really seen a lot of that with the new administration. We've seen a lot of that fear. We were making a lot of progress when we were looking at, you know, who we're sending to jail and why and whether they need to be there. And of course, the incredible cost associated with that. So I do think the pendulum is swinging back.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back with a couple of other topics. Holly Wellborn is here. We'll be right back.
Dean Heller made a promise.
I'm telling you right now, I cannot support a piece of legislation that takes insurance away from hundreds of thousands of Nevadans.
But then Donald Trump threatened Dean Heller.
Look, he wants to remain a senator, doesn't he?
And then Dean Heller broke his promise.
Heller says he has changed his stance on the repeal.
He decided not to cross Trump.
Senator Dean Heller will vote to proceed. That is a complete 180.
Dean Heller broke his promise and caved to Donald Trump.
SMP is responsible for the content of this ad.
I'm Jonathan Scott from Property Brothers. I'm a Nevada. Let me tell you why I support question three. I've seen energy choice work. Customers in states with real energy choice have seen their rates drop by 14%. Solar companies are ready to build projects in Nevada if question three passes. They'll provide energy at a lower rate to residential customers than the NV Energy monopoly. Don't believe the no on three scare tactics. Question three is about your right to choose cheaper, cleaner energy. Get the facts.
Women and children, when facing fleeing an abusive relationship, shouldn't have to choose leaving their pet behind or leaving. And Noah's Animal House removes that barrier. And we are excited to have a facility in Las Vegas to serve Southern Nevada and Northern Nevada in Reno so that women and children can be right next door to their pets while they're on their road to recovery and safety.
Grab your toga and head inside Edge Nightclub for Noah's Animal House 2. Animal House has gone country this year with a live performance by country star Tyler Rich.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
Back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with Holly Wellborn. She's the policy director for the ACLU of Nevada. And I do want to point out that Marcy's Law has spent a significant amount of money promoting that issue on this program. So only fair to point that out. So let's talk about Scott Dozier, the person who wants to be executed and can't be at this point in time. Your thoughts on this, and why when somebody already says, I'm ready to die, I committed the crime, I'm going to do the punishment, your thoughts on where we are?
You know, that's a question we get often when we're talking about Mr. Dozier, but this isn't just about Mr. Dozier. This is about everyone else who is on death row. Are we going to begin a domino effect of executions in the state of Nevada by forcing this, by forcing the Nevada Department of Corrections, who has struggled to find the medications for a humane execution, which in our estimation does not exist. There's no way to humanely execute someone with a cocktail of drugs that they are pushing. It will paralyze someone. They will suffocate. We have to think about the long-term effects of what beginning executions in the state of Nevada will mean.
I'm going to bring up something, and we're going to get letters and cards and probably angry phone calls. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you want a quick process, the firing squad is still available.
We have the Eighth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. When we're talking about a law enforcement officer who has to be the person that goes to bed every night thinking about whether or not they were the one that had the bullet in their gun before they shot someone, that has detrimental effects on people, that has many consequences for a person psychologically who's dealing with that. That's also just such a outdated method that we can't call that humane.
You know that right now at Creech Air Force Base in southern Nevada, where this program is watched, that there are people flying drone missions and executing terrorists via drones right now. What's the difference?
That's matters of war, and we could debate, you know, what these, you know, larger aspects of what's appropriate in a time of war, what's appropriate in other circumstances. I think here we're talking about a person who's been convicted of a criminal offense in the United States. They are entitled to rights as people under our Constitution, and the Eighth Amendment protects those rights. When we're talking about war times, that's protected by a variety of other laws, and of course there are human rights laws that we believe are sometimes violated when we're in times of war, but I think we're talking about two very different things.
All right, so now let's bring on a completely different thing, but kind of dovetails in, which is we now have right to die laws in Oregon and California, where people, after consultation with doctors on multiple occasions, can get a cocktail that they can take themselves out. If we can do that, why can't we use those same drugs to be able to execute somebody? Because obviously, the way that we are doing this right to die is a humane method, or appears to me at least to be a humane method. I would love to see it picked up here in the state of Nevada. What's the difference?
The difference is who has the power and authority of making that decision to end one's life. When we're making a decision after a terminal illness, when you've gone through a variety of different psychological examinations, and you're making that decision to die a humane death, to die a dignified death, because you're ready to go, because you're ready to face that, it's a decision you make on your own. When we're talking about an execution, it's a decision that's made by the state. It's the state implementing it, and it's a person who is essentially committing suicide by state.
All right, but Scott Dozier said he is ready to die. He's already said he's ready to die.
He has, and that's a complex issue, but they're very different. And we have to think about what that is going to entail for other people who are on death row who don't want to die.
It's interesting, and we're going to have to agree to disagree mm-hmm. on that, but I mean, I think that, you know, we have, you know, a very similar circumstance, different periods in life, say, but the circumstance of mm-hmm. taking one's own life and doing it in a humane way, and then somebody who is up for execution who could be afforded the same humane way of dying, who is willing to die, wants to die, does not want to spend the rest of their life on death row. I'm not sure I see a huge difference in that. But I certainly respect your opinion.
Yeah, it's an interesting response, but Mr. Dozier is not terminally ill. Mr. Dozier is simply suicidal.
Right, but he's terminal in the sense of the law in the state of Nevada that he has been sentenced to die. And it's just a question of if or when that will occur. But let's take a break. We'll come back and we've got some other stuff to talk about.
Thank you.
We'll be right back.
The 6th Annual Nevada Newsmakers Goes to Washington is brought to you by Pro Group Management, workers' comp that works for you, the Nevada Trucking Association, Motion and Purpose are a truck's greatest virtue, and Par Tolls Development Company, breathing life into Northern Nevada's future.
Dear Nevada,
there's a kidnapping underway.
We're taking your Senate seat in California.
Liberals in California have hijacked our Senate race. Put $1.9 million into Jackie Rosen's campaign.
Vote for Jackie Rosen or else.
California wants Jackie Rosen because Jackie Rosen votes like Pelosi 90% of the time.
Jackie Rosen.
Trillions in taxes, job-killing regulations. Don't let California kidnap your Senate seat. Vote against
Jackie Rosen.
NRSC is responsible for the content of this advertising.
You tried to move on. You tried to put your life back together. Until one day, you see him. At the store, when you're leaving work. Somewhere you may never expect. The criminal who tore your life apart is walking free. But you may never know until you come face to face with him. It's time for equal rights. It's time for question one.
I can't do it. Stupid, like my mom.
We can't do anything at Mommy's because you won't pay child support.
Dad said you cheated, and he's not even sure he's my dad.
Mommy said you left both of us, so she isn't gonna let me see you.
I look just like my father.
I'm divorce attorney Marilyn York, and I may represent men, but hate has no gender, only casualties. Please, stop sacrificing your children in your war against your ex.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
Back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with Holly Wellborn. She's the policy director of the ACLU of Nevada. So you guys are working on election protection, but we've had Ira Victor on this program, who is an expert in cybersecurity, who says that the problem is not at the election sites. It's not the fact that machines are not hooked up to the internet. It's that the programs themselves can be tampered with prior to being installed on the election machines, and that that is the big problem that we're facing and not dealing with. Your thoughts on that?
We fight every day for that election integrity, that if, you know, there are individuals who are trying to interfere with our elections, we definitely need to take a look at that. But I think that there are programs in place through the registrar, through the Secretary of State, that they are checking on that, that they're doing screenings on what's, you know, occurring within those machines and the technologies. That's why, you know, initiatives like automatic voter registration and the software that's available through those programs, so the DMV will help protect some of that. So that's something.
But you're not concerned with the, you know, I mean, just over the weekend we saw Facebook alerting, what, 50 million people that their accounts have been hacked. I mean, you would have thought that Facebook, of all places, would be a place that was secure. And Mr. Victor, who is very well respected, is consultant to the Nevada State Legislature and others, is saying that, that these programs can be hacked before they be even put on the machines.
Yeah, it's definitely a concern that is always out there. I mean, look at what we've been dealing with through Facebook. I think it's interesting you bring that up, through all of the different social media programs that, you know, it has benefits of, you know, bringing a lot of people together, et cetera, but it also has these, the benefit or lack thereof of, you know, influencing people and in beginning that, you know, conversation about, you know, different, you know, electoral candidates, different initiatives. And if that's being influenced by outside influencers, that's definitely problematic.
Let me ask you this, because this is something that has concerned me. You know, for a long time, you know, people have wanted to buy somebody's vote. You know, if you vote for somebody, then we'll give you money to do that. And for a long time, we couldn't find a way for somebody to prove that they had voted for somebody, and therefore, if they were in that way bent, that they could collect the money. Now, we don't ban cameras going into the voting booth. Somebody could take a photograph of that roll, the printed roll that comes up, and go back and show somebody that they voted for the candidate. Are we looking at that as a form of election fraud? I think that's way more concerning.
There's actually laws in Nevada that prohibit taking pictures.
I understand they may prohibit it, but is anybody doing anything about it?
Doing anything about it, how to enforce that provision?
Yeah, I mean, why are we not having people leave their cell phones where they register and then coming back to collect them after the fact that they voted?
Yeah, my understanding, you're not supposed to take your cell phone out while you're at the voting booth.
I've never seen a sign that says that.
It was interesting in Florida. I don't know if you remember last election cycle, Justin Timberlake took a picture of his ballot after he had cast it, and it was actually in violation of Florida law similarly. And he kind of came under fire for that because he was told he was doing something illegal. We think that people have a right to do that, to say who they're voting for and post it as long as it's personal to them. But certainly no one else has a right to come in and, take a look at your ballot and talk about who it is
that
you're voting
for. But you don't have concern that somebody posts who they voted for, especially in poorer neighborhoods across the country, that somebody offers you $20 to vote for candidate A? You take a picture of it, you post it on Facebook or whatever, you just show somebody your camera, and they're getting money for voting.
That is a concerning problem.
How many laws are we breaking here?
That is that we don't want to influence elections in that way. And I'd be interested to know, if there's programs and places where that's actually been happening.
Will you report back to us, please?
I will do that.
All right. And that's where we got to leave it.
Cool.
Melbourne, thank you so much. Great conversation. And we'll be right back.
A bird's eye captures its surroundings at different heights. At Brian Culpa Photography, we can make your imagination soar over buildings, parks, cityscapes, and beyond. Brian's images tell the story and get the job done. If you need a new perspective to tell your story, contact Brian today. Brian Culpa Photography. Experience the bird's eye view at brianculpaphotography.com.
Hi, my name's Marilyn Miner, and I'm sure you'd agree that Nevada's a very special place to live. I was born here, and my husband and I have raised our family here. I feel it's a privilege to live and work in the Truckee Meadows. I especially enjoy helping my clients reach their real estate goals. Sometimes the smallest details provide the greatest satisfaction. I'd be complimented to talk to you about your next move.
Call Marilyn Miner at Dixon Realty, 742-1280, or log on to marilynminer.com.
St. Ives Florist, for every holiday and every special occasion, for romance, custom home design. We have the largest selection of fresh flowers in Northern Nevada. And we also offer a large selection of unique gift items. Come see me, Lori Ann, at St. Ives Florist, 700 South Wells Avenue, or call me at 333-9190.
Take a look at Pro Group Management and see how your workers' comp requirements can be met head-on. By taking a proactive approach, Pro Group can assure that your company is meeting or exceeding state and federal standards. As you move forward in your industry, Pro Group moves with you, simplifying regulatory tasks, clearing the way so you can get the job done, and look to your future success. Pro Group Management. Workers' comp that works for you.
On our next broadcast, Marsha Birkbeigler joins us. She's the chairwoman of the Washoe County Commission. We'll see you then. We'll be right back.